hear NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday night, Tailgate.
And now joining us here on Thursday night Tailgate is Keith Hirschland. Keith has become a wonderful friend over on the golf side on our show Next on the Tee. We've been blessed to have him join us a few times over there. Let me give you some background on Keith. He is an Emmy Award-winning TV producer. He's produced shows for ESPN, ESPN2, and the Golf Channel. In fact, he was among the original people that started the Golf Channel back in 1995. He's written three great books. The first one, Cover Me Boys, I'm Going In, Tales of the Tube from a Broadcast Brat, which was one of my favorite books from 2017. He's written two others titled Big Flies, and the newest one is called The Flower Girl Murder, which I just ordered off of Amazon.com. Looking forward to reading that one. And we're excited that Keith is with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Keith, thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Keith.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Bob. What I'm wondering is why I'm on this show with all these great people. Christine is one of my heroes. She and Bob Picozzi are Sports Center legends. I mean, they're great. And then you had Will just on, which was a great listen, and Tony Collins. And then I'm trying to figure out what the heck I'm doing on this show.
Keith, come on. You did so many great things at ESPN, too. You were there at the beginning of the Golf Channel. You've written three fantastic books. Come on. How much better can it get than having Keith Hirschland on the show? You kidding me?
Well, I appreciate that, Chris, and you're a great friend, and I appreciate always being with you because you're one of the best in the business, and I look forward to chatting with Bob, who I don't know.
Yeah, so let's do that now. Let's get started because the first thing I want you to be able to share with this audience, we've talked about it over on the golf side, but I want our audience here to understand your book. Right, Cover Me Boys, I'm Going In. It's absolutely, like I say, it's absolutely fantastic. And I want to start with your father, because this audience hasn't heard the story about your father, Lee. Talk about how he got started in television and got you started as well.
Oh, boy, that's going way back. My dad was my hero, obviously, and I think a lot of people say that about their dads. But he was a guy that was in the Navy, served his country, grew up in Pennsylvania, in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and served his country in the Navy, and got out of the Navy and was stationed when he was in Honolulu. So he started working in local radio and TV in Honolulu, and one of the stations that he worked at was owned by a guy named Don Reynolds, who owned stations all over the country, one of which happened to be in Reno, Nevada. So he asked my dad if he wanted to be a part of the station in Reno, the TV station in Reno, which he accepted, became general manager. And at the time, Reno only had two TV stations. They had a CBS station and an NBC station, and they shared ABC's programming. And my dad said, after a couple of years of running the CBS affiliate in Reno, that it was time for Reno to have their own ABC affiliate. So he started KTVN, which was the ABC affiliate originally in Reno, Nevada. So I grew up as a kid, watching my mom and dad work at this television station in Reno, Nevada, and it got in my blood. And I thought, man, I love this. Of course, what I wanted to be was a professional golfer. And in Northern Nevada, you could be pretty good and shoot around 75, but when you went somewhere else where people were actually playing the game for a living and trying to get to be professionals, they were shooting 64 and 65, so your 75 didn't look so good. So I thought, well, heck, if I want to stay in sports, which I did, I better get in the TV business. And I was lucky enough that my dad owned a station and I was part of that. And all those stories are in Cover Me Boys. And I became part of that station, then went on to a station in Connecticut, WTNH, and worked with the great Bob Picozzi and other folks. And then got a job in LA working for Don Olmeyer, which turned into an ESPN gig, which turned into a Golf Channel gig for almost 20 years.
And so let's back up just a little bit. You talked about, the time in Reno. You grew up there. San Francisco was the closest major market sports town-wise. You were there for the catch with Joe Montana to Dwight Clark back in January of 82. And while the rest of the country was watching Heidi, you got to see Daryl LaMonica lead the Raiders to that comeback win over Joe Namath and the Jets. Talk about those two stories.
Yeah. Those are stories in my book. And, you know, I was blessed and fortunate that my folks were sports fans. They were huge sports fans. So we played golf. You know, golf was a big thing in our family. I have two brothers and we all played golf together and we all watched sports together and we were huge Bay Area sports fans. Because in Reno, when you grow up in Reno, Nevada, there aren't professional sports teams there, but 3 hours away in the Bay Area, in San Francisco, there are a number of them. So we became, our family became Giants and A's fans and Raiders and 49ers fans. And I gravitated to both the San Francisco teams, the 49ers and the Giants. But what I still love to this day about my parents was that they appreciated what sports could bring to kids and what sports could bring to a family and how it could bring everybody together in sports. You know, being a sports fan was a huge part of our family. So they made sure that every year, at least once or twice, we would go down to the Bay Area and see a 49er game or a Giants game or a Raiders game or A's game. So we were, it's just, you know, my dad had some connections because he ran the affiliated station in Reno. So we got to get tickets to, you know, certain games. And we were there at that NFC championship game when Joe Montana happened to throw that amazing pass to Dwight Clark. We were in the opposite end zone. So we were as far away, at least on field level, end zone to end zone, as you could be from the catch. But we were there when it happened. And we were also there up in about the second deck in Oakland Alameda Stadium during the Heidi Bowl. So we had no idea that the rest of the country wasn't watching this incredible comeback. And they were watching Heidi on television. We were watching a football game actually in the stands. So I was incredibly fortunate to have parents who were sports fans, and then, you know, the stars aligned and we were happy to be in the stadiums at those two events.
Bob, questions for Keith?
Hi, Keith. It's a pleasure to meet you and speak with
you.
Hey,
Bob.
We had talked to Bob Percozzi just very recently, and I grew up in New Haven, Keith, and WTNH was a very big part of my upbringing, and Channel 8, and you know, Big Dick Galliette was a friend of my father, and he became close when we became members of the same Sports Writers Alliance. And my goodness, I want to get your memories of your time in New Haven, the people you came across. They continue to do great things with guys like John Pearson and everything. But tell me more about your memories of New Haven, a very small big city, I guess.
Oh my God, my time in New Haven was a godsend. I was in Reno, you know, and I had decided that I wanted to pursue, you know, bigger things. So I sent a tape to ESPN. I was directing at the time, directing sportscasts and newscasts. And so I sent a tape to ESPN, and a gentleman named John Kaczynski, who was at ESPN at the time, saw my tape and liked my tape and decided that he wanted to hire me. So I made all the preparations to go to ESPN. I was thrilled and I was excited. And I, you know, I got to the point where, you know, at the time, and this is another one of those small world things, I was dating Elizabeth Vargas, who went on to become really famous at ABC in 2020 and a huge star. And she was in Phoenix at the time. So I went to visit her, and I was off the grid, and I came back to Reno and packing my bags, and I called ESPN and said, where do I go? What do I do? And they basically on the phone said, John Kaczynski doesn't work here anymore, so you don't have a job. And I was like, oh, wow. Well, okay. Well, what do I do now? And they said, well, we can put you in touch with a couple of other people who are now in charge of that thing. So I did that. They said, we're going to go back to the beginning, to square one, and look at other tapes. So they said, but in the meantime, you're in Reno. It would be a lot easier for us to hire you if you were closer. And we know that WTNH is looking for a director. So I went to the folks at WTNH, sent them my tape. They hired me. And so I worked at the Grade 8 in New Haven for almost 3 years, directing their newscasts. And, you know, I was the director for Bob Picozzi and Skip Church and those guys when the world, not the world famous, but the New Haven famous Big Board Sports came along. And, you know, I joke with Bob, and Bob and I are still friends, and thankfully, because there are, you know, I screwed up so many of Bob Picozzi's sportscasts that you can't imagine from a technical standpoint. I'm surprised that he's still my friend, but he is one of the greatest broadcasters I have ever had the pleasure to work with. And my time at WTNH and my time in New Haven and the friends I made there and the folks that I still stay in contact who worked there and still work there are some of my best friends in the entire industry. And that was a great, great time for me.
And Keith, the Golf Channel experience, you know, when we're old enough that we go back and we remember the birth of the Golf Channel. And I guess many of us, when we saw it get off the ground, we're saying, my goodness, can they have a channel just devoted to the sport of golf? And obviously they did. Just wanted to get your memories of when you first heard about the Golf Channel and when the interest came about.
Yeah, I was at ESPN. So I went to work after I left WTNH. I went to Los Angeles and worked for Don Ohlmeyer, the great Don Ohlmeyer, who had a production company in L.A. And one of the things that they were responsible for was producing all of the senior tour events, golf events, for ESPN. So I went and was part of that golf production team for Don Ohlmeyer for ESPN's golf. And about 4 months into my tenure at Ohlmeyer Communications, Don sold his company to ESPN. So we all became employees of ESPN at that time. And during that time, this was the late 80s, early 90s, and I spent some time in Bristol and enjoyed my time on ESPN2 working with Keith Olbermann and Susie Culver and Stu Scott and Kenny Mayne and Bill Pito and that whole group and Norby Williamson and Mark Gross, who are still at ESPN and still great friends. And at that time, when I was in New Haven, in Farmington and Bristol, you know, we started hearing these rumblings about a golf channel. There's a golf channel. Golf channel's coming up. And can you believe there's going to be a 24-hour golf channel?
Yeah.
And my phone didn't ring. And I had produced golf for ESPN for 5 years. And I thought, what the heck? You know, how come nobody's calling me? And finally, in the end of summer, early fall of 1994, I got a phone call from some folks at Golf Channel. And they asked me to come down for an interview. They were looking for somebody to produce, you know, their tournament coverage. And I was thrilled and, you know, I was a little dismayed at why it had taken so long. But, you know, I had found out that they had interviewed Lance Barrow and Tommy Roy and Larry Cirillo and everybody else who had ever produced golf for, you know, any network and decided that, you know, these folks who are all tremendous talents and great producers said, I'm not willing to leave my current job to take a flyer on what is probably not going to be successful. So they finally called me and I jumped at the chance. I was, you know, everybody in the world said, this is not going to work. They're never going to make it. Golf Channel, you know, a 24-hour network devoted exclusively to golf will never be successful. And they said, what the heck are you doing? And I said, I'm taking a chance. And it was the greatest 18 years of my life.
Keith, going back to some of your stories in your book, Cover Me, Boys, I'm Going, and you talk about the talent you got to work with. Talk about some of the talent that you got to see, you know, growing up at the Golf Channel. People like Kelly Tillman, Scott Van Pelt, and our friend on the golf side, Peter Kessler, as well.
Yeah, it was amazing, Chris and Bob. I mean, you know, you think about and the talent I got to work with at ESPN. Even, you know, I left ESPN's golf side when you know Jim Kelly and Bob Murphy and Jim Colbert and, you know, that Andy North, that group of guys were doing Gary Koch. Gary Koch was our on-course reporter during ESPN's golf. The time that I was with ESPN Golf, Gary Koch was an on-course reporter. So I left that group of incredibly talented people and then got to work at Golf Channel with, you know, I mean, Brian Hammonds and Rich Lerner, you know, Rich Lerner is one of the greatest storytellers in our industry. And Peter Kessler, who, you know, Peter has an interesting kind of dichotomy, because he's one of the most polarizing guys, it seems like, around. If you follow him on social media, he tends to pick fights, but at the same time, Golf Channel would have never, ever, ever succeeded without the talents of Peter Kessler, because we had live tournament coverage, which was a key cog in the Golf Channel's success. But Peter's show, Golf Talk Live, brought people to the screen, brought people to the network that may have never, ever come to an all golf network. And Peter, I still say, you know, as you look back on 25 years of Golf Channel, you know, Peter Kessler is probably on that Mount Rushmore of Golf Channel people that made that thing successful. And then, you know, I got to work with a ton of talented people, and Scott Van Pelt was one of those guys that almost never made it on the air, but our COO at the time, Gary Stevenson, saw some spark of talent in this guy, and all of a sudden Scott Van Pelt made it on TV, and Scott Van Pelt became one of the most popular people on the network. It was an amazing time. It was like the wild, wild west of television, because we got to do almost anything we wanted to do, but the people that really had talent ended up shining through and becoming part of the fabric that made the Golf Channel successful.
Keith, tell the Scott Van Pelt story about, you know, doing the highlights and how he sort of went rogue and then all of a sudden caught on.
Oh, that was a great story. That was one, you know, that was Scott's first kind of foray into on-camera work, because he was in the library. Scott was one of the guys that I went to when I needed a shot or two. If I was doing a feature on a certain player, I would have to go down to the library and get the footage from that player. We had all these, you know, tapes and you know, back in that, you know, 1994, it was videotape of highlights of all these players. So if I was going to do a story, a feature on, let's say it was Tiger, and I wanted that hole in one from the Phoenix Open when everybody's throwing plastic bottles and everything when he made the hole in one at 16, then I would have to go down to the library and request that video, and Scott would be one of those guys at the desk that I would ask for that video, and he would get it to me. And all this, and he was constantly, you know, going to people and saying, I want to be more than this. I want to be on the air. I can do this. I can be on the air. And our chief operating officer at the time, Gary Stevenson, took a liking to Scott, and he said, here's what I'm going to do, because we were televising tournaments and showing players, and we would get phone calls from girlfriends, wives, friends, mothers. You know, you showed this tournament on TV, but you never showed my friend, my son, my boyfriend, my husband. And so our COO, Gary Stevenson, said, we're going to have a half-hour show every night that just goes through every single golf tournament's leaderboard and shows the names of every single person that played in that event. And we're going to call it the Leaderboard Report. And we're going to have Scott Van Pelt be the host. And he sat Scott Van Pelt down and he said, here's your mission. Your job is to come on the air and say, this is the Leaderboard Report. I'm Scott Van Pelt. here are the scores from the golf action today. And 30 minutes later, come on the air and say, this has been the Leaderboard Report. I'm Scott Van Pelt. See you tomorrow. So Scott said, fine, I do it. I'll do it. I want to be on TV. And then 3 days into the show, it may have been four, it may have been two, Scott decided, this isn't enough for me. I'm going to vamp. So among the famous stories was a leaderboard came up with Corey Pavin on it, and it was like Corey Pavin won over. And as that score came, as the page came, the Corey Pavin's name came up, Scott said, well, there's Corey Pavin at one over. I guess he's sleeping in the garage tonight. And it was like, oh my goodness. He's not supposed to do that, but man, that was funny. And so the next day, Gary called him into the office. We were all there. And Scott was like, he had a little bit of his tail between his legs. And Gary looked at him and said, that was brilliant. Do more of that. That's exactly what we want. And all of a sudden, Leaderboard Report became one of the most popular shows on the Golf Channel, which was just graphics of leaderboards and Scott talking about certain players and what they shot that day.
That's a great story. I love that. Keith, you've written two other books, Big Flies,
yeah.
The Flower Girl Murder just came out. I just ordered that on Amazon.com. Let our listeners know what those books are about.
Well, they're fiction. They're novels. They're mysteries. I wrote Cover Me Boys. Because when my parents died, my wife, I've told you this story, Chris, my wife, we were standing over a box of memorabilia from my mom and dad after they passed away. And there were all kinds of awards and commendations and newspaper clippings and about my dad and my mom and the things they had done and the milestones they had achieved. And my wife looked at me and she said, my gosh, you have helped start two television networks. You've met some of the most famous athletes in the world. You've produced hundreds of golf tournaments. You've won an Emmy Award. Don't let this be your kids sitting over a box when you're gone saying, we had no idea Dad did this. So she said, start writing a journal about all the stories and all the things that you've done. And that turned into Cover Me Boys. And when we published that, I realized, Chris, that I enjoyed writing the stories so much. And I had been telling stories, whether it was the story of a golf tournament or a feature or a tease or a bumper, I'd been writing my entire career. So why stop? So I wrote Big Flies, which is a book about a mystery about four real life, still unsolved robberies, including the D.B. Cooper hijacking that happened while I was in Reno. That plane that D.B. Cooper was supposed to be on landed in Reno. He jumped out somewhere over the Pacific Northwest with $200,000 strapped to him, and nobody ever found him. The FBI just recently closed that case. So I decided to write a mystery about what would happen if you were the kid who grew up and finally realized your dad was D.B. Cooper. So that was Big Flies. And then The Flower Girl Murder was a book about kind of based on an experience we had, Sarah and I had when we were living in North Carolina, that, you know, we had a house that we wanted to sell, and the person that wanted to buy it for his daughter was a guy that we figured probably had never set foot in a bank before, that probably buried all his money in coffee cans on his property somewhere in North Carolina. So that was the impetus for that book. And, you know, it's just about telling stories, and I'm already writing a fourth book that I hope will be a lot of fun. And you know, it's just what I do now.
So Keith, let our listeners know, Where can they go to get copies of your book?
They're on Amazon. They're, you can go to Keith Hirschland, all one word, KeithHirschland.com. And you can order them through there. They're on Amazon.com. And I am on social media on Instagram at KHHAuthor and on Twitter at BigFliesBook. So I love to hear from folks, and I'm happy to send people books and sign folks' books. And, you know, I just think that we should all read more and write more and listen more and be more engaged.
Well, Keith, it's always such a thrill for me to get to spend time with you, Bob, you know, here on this show, having you tell your stories and the things that your experiences and all those things. I love having you on the golf side. Love having you here on Thursday Night Tailgate. So many more things that we would love to get into with you. I hope you come back and do it again sometime. You are certainly fantastic, my friend.
I will always be here for you. And, Bob, it's a pleasure meeting you, and I hope we have a long and fruitful time together.
Well, same to you. Thank you, Keith.
Keith, take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. Look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks, Chris. You too.
Good night.
All right. Take care, Keith. That is Keith Hirschland. Again, HIRSHLAND. And his books, Bob, you know, and my wife will tell you, I'm not a reader. And I got his book, Cover Me Boys, I'm Going In. Again, Tales of the Tube from a Broadcast Brat is the subtitle of that. And it was one of my favorite books of 2017. That and another book from Gary Player, my two favorite books of 2017. And it's, you know, it's not a thin book. It's a very thick book. And again, not being a reader, but you start to read the stories, Bob, and it's one of those books you can't put down. The first story is great, and then the next chapter is great, and the next chapter is better than that, and it sort of builds off itself as, you know, you go through his father's life and his life and all the things he's gotten to be a part of. Folks, I promise you, I cannot recommend Cover Me Boys any more highly than what you're hearing me talk about, Bob. It's a fantastic book, and Keith is absolutely outstanding. You know, we talk about top shelf people. You talk about it all the time. They don't come better than Keith Hirschland, and his books are great.
He's terrific, Chris, and, you know, part of his allure and what makes him so good is the experiences he's had at so many different levels, so many different sports, and obviously it would seem that it would be just a normal thing for him to start writing about these things, and we're glad he did, but you're right, we just about touched the surface from what we could talk to him on this show, so I look forward to having him on the show very soon.